Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Walk Your Talk with Leanne. It's a Monday, and I am so grateful to be with all of you tonight on this fine Monday evening. Again, I'm Leanne Parsons, and I'm the Walk Your Talk coach, and I am coming to you live from my studio here in the mountains of New Mexico. The last time that we visited, I was sharing with you in June that I was looking out at the mountains from my studio and I couldn't see them due to the fact of a lot of smoke and fire out my studio window. Well, tonight I'm able to tell you I still can't see my mountains, but I am very grateful to be able to share with you that the reason I can't see the mountains this evening is because of heavy cloud cover. We are in the middle of monsoon season here in New Mexico, so we are very, very grateful for the amount of rain and cloud cover and cooler temperatures that we are having here this evening. So thank you very much for being with us tonight. Well, listeners, we have a really great show for you this evening on Life Coach Radio Network. Life Coach family, I have an amazing opportunity, and I would love to introduce you to a new friend of mine. You know, this is summertime. We're in the middle of July. We're kind of halfway through our summer. And it's a great opportunity for us to stop and pause just a moment and take a look at what's been happening this summer around us and what's been happening this summer around the world. And I'm very honored tonight to introduce you all to Blake Collingsworth of Lincoln, Nebraska. Blake, along with his wife, Kathy, are the founders and the creators of the Joshua Collingsworth Memorial Foundation. This foundation was created in July of 2008. And without further ado, I would like to welcome you, Blake, and thank you so much for sharing your life with us tonight here on Life Coach Radio Network.
Well, it's an honor to be with you, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to people about our mission and a message that we would love to get out to people because we know how important it is through our own personal experience. So thank you for having us, and we really do appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. So Blake and I got acquainted with each other over the internet these last few weeks, and I was very struck by his story and their openness and the courage that both he and his wife have shown these last several years. And so, Blake, how about if you take us back in just a few years and tell us about what brought you to start this foundation?
Well, in Lincoln, Nebraska, is June 1st, beautiful day in Lincoln. We don't get a lot of those. we get our fair share, but it was a beautiful day, and we have my wife, Kathy, has a large extended family, a lot of brothers and sisters. She's one of seven, and all very close. We love to get together, and we get together a lot and enjoy each other's company. And just so happens that I'm a home builder, and when we built our house, this house that we live in today, one of the things that we decided to do is to put a pool in. And when you put a pool in and none of the other family members have a pool, of course, you are immediately the place to be on a hot, you know, spring or summer day. And so that's a traditional activity in our family and our house, and everybody comes over and gets together and has a good time. One of the aspects that I always try to talk to people about is, as a home builder, when I was designing the backyard and the pool and all the different aspects that go into that, one of my forethoughts was for security, safety, maintenance, all the different aspects that come in to putting the pool in your backyard or the other things that relate to construction. So I was pretty diligent in making sure that we had what I thought were the important things that you should have around a pool. We have a vinyl cover that can be pulled over our pool at any time. We have a security camera on the area. It's completely fenced in. That is a state and a county and a city law in Nebraska. Some places they aren't, but they are here. So the pool area is completely fenced in, which is a good thing. We truly believe in lots of layers of protection. That day, there was a lot of people that had been over swimming, and we had talked about barbecuing, so some of the people got out of the pool and went to go change and to get stuff for the barbecue, knowing they were coming back, and other family members were on their way over. And in that transition period, I had left the pool area, and Kathy was with Joshua and knew that she needed to start getting ready for these other people that were starting to come over. And she got Joshua out of the pool, and she had him in the basement area of the playing with toys, and she went to light the grill. At that time, a lot of family members were coming over, and they were actually getting ready to get into the pool. Well, I heard Kathy say, "Blake, have you seen Josh?" And as a parent, when you have another adult or somebody say, "I don't know where our child is," if you've ever experienced that, you know that your heart drops and you just immediately go into a panic mode. Mm-hmm. I was in my front office and started moving toward where she was in the back of the house, which is the kitchen area. The minute she said it, I started walking that direction, and it was a split second later I heard her scream. And it was amazing that when the scream that came out of her, I did not do anything but head toward the basement and knowing I needed to go out that back door. And I was moving as fast as I could move, and she was about ready to run me over coming behind me. And we hit the back pool area, and all I could say was, "Where is he? Where is he?" And she jumped in the pool because she had seen from the kitchen window him in the pool. And that's what made her scream. And we literally rushed by my nieces, or a couple nieces and nephews that were in the, they were in the basement getting ready to go out there. I mean, we ran by them. And Kathy jumped in the water. I was able to reach Joshua from the side of the pool. And my brother-in-law, who had just arrived also, he was reaching over my shoulder, and we pulled Joshua out of the pool. We brought him inside right away. My brother was medically trained, and his wife also, she's actually a respiratory therapist. They started CPR immediately. So we had people that had those skills to start CPR, knew what they were doing. They were professional at it, and they started immediately on him. Of course, we dialed 911. It felt like it was a year before they arrived. They arrived, they started working on him and took him to our local hospital here. And when I arrived, Kathy rode with him in the ambulance, and when I arrived at the hospital, they said, "What we've had is heart beating." My first thought was, "Oh my goodness, thank goodness, you know, they got him back. We're going to be okay." But the look on the medical staff's face was, now that I look back on it, was so sombering, and it didn't sink in, because you're stretching and reaching as hard as you can for the most positive things that you can pull out of a moment like that, Joelle. And they said that we can do a lot better for Joshua in Omaha. And so they life-flighted him to Omaha. They allowed Kathy to fly with Joshua in the helicopter, and I drove up. And I remember driving up with family, and I said, "Well, this is almost exactly Joshua's 6-month birthday. He was born November 30th. And so I said, "Well, Joshua's going to have 2 birthdays now," is what my thought process was. And when I walked in the ICU, pediatric ICU in Omaha, the doctor standing there, and I said, and Kathy was laying next to Joshua in the hospital bed, and I said, "How is he?" And he just flat out, "There's no hope." I mean, it came at me like a, you know, it's a ton of bricks. And I, "Well, how can that be? His heart's beating, this and that." But he does a brain activity. He goes, "I've done the test. There's just, he's not really here." And I was not very happy with the doctor for coming at me that way. But I guess he has to do what he has to do, and he has to say what the way life really moves. But you don't always want to have it hit you that way, I guess. So, you know, we spent the next 3 days by his side doing a lot of tests on Joshua, you know, 100% looking at the potential. Is the brain activity going to stimulate? Is it going to, you know, are we getting any reaction out of him? He was on a respirator helping him breathe, but his heart was beating fine and normally. But all the brain scans and the CTs and everything that they did, it just doesn't take but a couple minutes of a child losing oxygen to their brain, and they're just not well enough developed, and they lose it so fast. And we as humans have no way to this day yet to determine how to regenerate those brain cells and to get fire those things back up again. And they said he just will never be what he was. We can force feed him and do all these things with him, but he will probably more than likely stay in a vegetative state for the rest of his life. So we, you know, held those 3 days laying there next to him and holding him and talking about, well, what is it we want to do here? Do we want to hope? Do we want to go through these processes and see if, you know, a medical miracle will happen? And through discussion and the faith and working with the family and talking about, you know, what is this that, you know, what do we need to do here? We decided we had to let God take, you know, make the decision and take control. And the doctor said, let's take him off the life support. He may very well be fine. He may very well start his breathing on his own and doing, you know, and then we'll take it from there. And we had discussions with, in that same process, we just said, go ahead and have discussions immediately with organ donation, because Kathy and I have always believed, it's always been on our driver's license, if something ever happens to us, we want, it's so much more important that somebody else gets an opportunity to have a stronger, better life after that fact. And so we've all, both have always had that communication with each other. So it wasn't a hard discussion for us to say, maybe something out of this right away can, something good can happen, we hope. So we had those discussions, and they took him off the respirator at around 2 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon. The accident was Sunday morning, and about 40 minutes later, he started to fade, and his vital signs slowed down, and he stopped breathing, and he passed away about 45 minutes after we took him off all the life support systems. And we do know that they were able to harvest a lot of his organs and some of his tissues, and some of those heart valves went to one child in Texas and a couple in different parts of the country. So we know that different parts of Joshua are in children in other places who are hopefully running and laughing and doing things that kids should be doing. So that was the start of the process of knowing some things can come out of, some good things can come out of bad things. And so immediately, even the day that we lost him, we knew it wasn't, it was horrible, but there's always a sunny side to the street. The glass is always half full, I guess, is the way that you try to decide to look at it. And that was the first step. Then anybody who's lost anybody, they know, and as well as I do, and anybody else I talk to, there's so many different emotions you go through. It's a roller coaster ride from that point on, and where you take the next step is what led us. So I've been rambling on for a while. I guess I'll let you jump in if you want to.
No, oh my goodness, Blake. That was just, you just did such a beautiful job of sharing with us. And I'm just so humbled by your story and so honored to be able to share this time with you. You know, the love that you have for Joshua and for other people comes through so clearly in your voice and in your story. Just very sacrificial love, very committed love. And, you know, when I hear you speak about all of the precautions that you took and as a builder, and the close-knit love of family and togetherness and connectedness during this whole process, is incredibly inspirational to all of us who are listening. And, you know, none of us can just fathom the amount of emotion. And like you said, that roller coaster that you have, you know, certainly been up and down multiple times during these last several years. So, wow, it's just all I can say. And I just want to say to our listeners, we've got several of you out there. I want to thank you for tuning in. And I want to give you an opportunity right now. If you would like to call in and chat with Blake or myself, I want to go ahead and provide you with a phone number that you can do that real quick here before we go on. And that number is 646-716-9397. And if you desire to call in, please feel free to do that. We welcome your calls, questions, thoughts, or a story. You know, Blake, as I was doing some research after I became acquainted with your foundation, it was staggering to me to find out that drowning is the number one cause of death in children ages one or, you know, under 4 years of age. And so when you hear those statistics, as I'm sure you're very aware of them, you know, what came up for you as all of this happened with Joshua? Were you aware of the statistics at that time?
I was, and that's one of the frustrating aspects of it. I did not have any idea, and I don't know if that's because we live in Nebraska and it's not as prevalent as it is in your standard warmer parts of the country, Florida, Texas, California. And so I was not aware that the statistics were bad. I was aware of the danger, otherwise I wouldn't have put all those precautions in place. What amazed me is how television and movie stars, you think, and it's like, oh, they've got him, his heart beating again, he's going to be fine. That's what the movies and that whole thought process is like, oh, this happens and then we bring him back. And, you know, sadly I've had to learn so many other different ways. Really, when we came back from the hospital, I had to then start researching and saying what happened. And that's what, mm-hmm. you know, part of that whole process is what happened that day? What did we miss? Because Kathy and I are not what I would consider neglectful parents, obviously. We had huge extended
right.
family. We loved it. It's like, what happened? I had all these things in place. And part of that is the false sense of security that never rely on a fence or an alarm system or a locked door. I mean, always take those extra precautions. And when you create that false sense of security that you think you've done everything you should do, and that's probably where I missed the ball. And the other thing that really, when I started looking into it, is not only how fast it can happen, but how it happens traditionally. And what happened in Joshua's situation that day, he actually looked and saw an opportunity that nobody was around the pool, and that was his opportunity to go fill his older brother's water gun, which his older brother would never let him play with when he came around or his older brother was around. So he did what a child would normally do. Hey, here's an opportunity for me to get to do something that my older brother doesn't let me do. And I know this just because when I had to go back to the pool and pulled the vinyl cover back off, this water gun was in the pool, and I know it wasn't when I left the area. Joshua's older brother was not swimming that day, and so I found that lone water gun floating in the pool, and I was able to make pretty good assumption that he found that opportunity, tried to fill it, lost his balance, and fell in the water because he didn't go out there to go swimming. I know that because he wasn't to that point yet. He was still a little apprehensive of the water. We were working on, you know, the swimming aspects but hadn't gotten to that point. By the end of the summer, he probably easily would have been swimming. But he went out there to do something what normally children do and fell in, did not have the capability or the skills to save himself, and we didn't see him in time in order to save him. And looking at that, I said, this is so tragic. We had all these different things in place, and he slipped through the cracks. Perfect little child slipped through the cracks, and we've lost him. And I said, what did we miss? And the interesting part was the simple fact of me just saying to Joshua, hey, Joshua, the swimming pool area is only when we're all together. It is never alone. And if you ever want to go out there for any particular reason, you come and you grab mom or dad or grandma and grandpa or aunt and uncle by the hand and you take them with you. And that simple little thing for a child who loves to be with their parents or their grandparents, it's one of the easiest things to do is get their child to want to be with their grandparents. I mean, they just automatically want to be. So why not promote that? And I said, if we would have just talked to him and said, not relied on the fence and the pool cover and the alarm system and said, if you want to go out there, just come get me. When he saw that water gun, he could have come and got me, and we would still have him with us here today. Something so simple as that. Now, do we know that particular situation would have occurred? Not 100%. But just having a simple conversation with a child like that may save their life. And why wouldn't you want to have that conversation? That's the first thing that just dawned on me, and I realized because Joshua was so excited to please. I mean, I love to tell a story about the first time that he, Kathy and I were sitting around the room, and Joshua had pulled either the dog or the cat's tail. And simultaneously, Kathy and I went, Joshua! And it was so cute because we did it simultaneously and we didn't realize that we kind of startled him. And he stopped and he turned and he looked at us with these big saucer eyes and his lower lip stuck out and his shoulders shrugged and his head dropped and he turned and he marched and he stuck his nose in the corner. And I was just astounded. He was 18 months old when he did that. And I looked at Kathy and I said, have you put him in the corner yet? And she goes, no. And she goes, have you? And I said, no. And he had seen his older brother put in time out enough times that he knew the ramifications when he did something wrong. Here's what happens. So when he did something wrong, he knew at 18 months, oh, here's what the ramifications are for doing something wrong. He marched off and stood in the corner. It was one of the cutest things I've ever seen, and it's one of my fondest memories of Joshua. But I also realize, you know, sometimes you sit there and say, we can't talk to children. They don't understand these complex things that we're talking about. They are so bright and they pick up so many things. And if an 18-month-old knows to put himself in timeout, he can grasp when we start talking to them about don't go around water unless you're with an adult because water's fun, but only when we're all together. We talk to them from day one. Don't cross the street without looking both ways. Don't talk to strangers. Don't touch that stove. It's hot. We start from day one. And so that's where the progression of this decided for me to say, I messed up. Where I messed up was I didn't talk to Joshua about not going out to the pool unless he was with adults. We wanted to have the locks in place. We wanted to have the alarms in place. Those things you never want to rely on a conversation, but that's the starting point. And you use all those different aspects to protect your children. And you interrupt me anytime I'm taking too much time.
Oh, you know what? You're doing great, Blake. Yeah, just please continue to share.
One of the things that I tell parents when I get to talk to them about this, I say, what are the odds that you're going to be standing next to your child the first time they're offered alcohol or an illegal drug? I mean, are you going to be standing there next to them so you can protect them directly? Or more than likely, is their response going to be how you taught them before that moment came to their life? And we're talking about 12, 13, 14-year-olds or whatever that age, and you start talking to your children from very early on, no drugs, no alcohol, no smoking, whatever that case may be. And so that moment when you know you're not going to be there, but that conversation comes up, you hope that educational process and the example that you created for them is what sticks. And that's all we can hope for as parents sometimes. And so that's what we need to do, and that's what I'm talking about doing with children, with water safety. When you earlier talked about the statistics, it is the number one cause of unintentional death from ages 1 to 4, and the second leading cause of unintentional death from children under the age of 14 is drowning. And it's
wow.
it's so tragic. You can get perfectly healthy children, and their airways are cut off, and they're gone in literally a matter of minutes. And we can make a big difference in that just by talking to them and educating them. And we talk about creating a generational change in the way people perceive water. And we want people to know what Kathy and I didn't know on June 1st of 2008. We want to talk to as many people as possible. So,
right. Wow. Blake, that is an amazing story. And, you know, your connection of, you know, having that relationship and having that communication with those that we love that are within our sphere of influence and, you know, not missing those opportunities to share safety, to share love, to share values, to share, you know, all those important life lessons. You know, like you were saying, Blake, you know, we teach our children all the time, look both ways before you cross the street. You know, don't touch it, it's hot. And how often do we say right out of the gate, you know, don't go near the water unless you've got an adult with you. And, you know, I think that that's missing. I look back, I have college-age children, and I don't know that I said that to them right out of the gate either. We were, you know, in the water swimming, but I don't know that I necessarily spoke those words. And, you know, by you sharing that with our listeners this evening, what a powerful message to make sure, you know, listeners, I just want to encourage you, turn to those you love, your young children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and let them know that. And let them know how important it is, because it can be a second. You know, the curiosity of sweet little Joshua, you know, walking up to the edge, you know, with your deductive reasoning, it's pretty powerful to think, yeah, he wanted that water gun and he was going to do what all sweet little boys do. They go for what they want. And to, you know, have every safeguard in the world there just like you did, didn't matter if there wasn't another presence there. And their curiosity is not going to stop them on their own. And thank you so much for sharing that beautiful story about when he knew, when he had been corrected. I can just see that happening. And I've seen the beautiful pictures of your sweet Joshua online. And what a precious boy. And the love that you have for him just, you know, totally comes through, and how you have allowed his life to continue in your message. And it looks like we do have a caller on, Blake. Is it okay if I go ahead and take him off a hold here?
Sure.
Okay, great. Hey, 215, you're on live.
Hi, Leanne. This is Philomena.
Well, hi there. Thank you so much for calling in this evening.
Good. I'm excited to be calling in, and I wanted to share a story with Blake and your listeners, if that's possible.
You know what? We are honored that you would. Please do.
Sure. First, Blake, I wanted to thank you for even creating this organization. I mean, I think it's really important for children to realize how important water safety is. And for me, as a child, I used to spend my summers in Italy because my parents are from Italy, so we would go there for the summer to see relatives. And there was one summer in particular when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I had met this little boy who happened to be visiting his grandmother for the summer. And the two of us really connected. We became very good friends. He was one of these charismatic, funny kids that just was always the life of the party. I truly enjoyed spending my summer with him. So we had a great summer. I left Italy, came back to the U.S., and the following year I went back to visit my grandparents, and I asked my grandmother, when his name was Michele, when Michele would be arriving, because I knew it would be a great summer, you know, when I would see him. And she informed me that he had actually passed a few months prior. He had drowned in the river. And apparently what had happened was he was with two friends, and they had dared him to swim across to the other side. And he wasn't a strong swimmer. So he, you know, knowing his personality, obviously he went and did it. And he wasn't strong enough, and he ended up drowning. And I to me, it's just, you know, it's something that I constantly think about. Now I have two young little girls, and I never force them to do anything. I never force them to play any sports or anything like that. But the one thing that is very, very important that I am making them do is taking swim lessons, because I want to make sure if they're ever in a situation where there is no one there to help them, they can at least save themselves. So, you know, it was an unfortunate tragedy, but at the same time, he had such a positive impact in my life, and I constantly think about him. Even now, at the age of 37, I still think about him all the time, and what a wonderful, wonderful person he was, and how precious he was to have been on this earth for 8-9 years. So I just wanted to share that story with your audience, and again, I wanted to thank you for creating this wonderful organization, because I think it should be mandatory in all schools that children learn about water safety.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Wow, Philomena, thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, this just shows us, doesn't it, that this is a global issue. This isn't something just going on in the U.S. This happened in Italy, you know, almost 30 years ago. And the impact is still, you know, affecting you today. And it really has changed your convictions and strengthened your awareness as a mom and friend, probably in your community. And, you know, I have to say I agree with you. I think it should be a mandatory part of education as well. And so, Blake, what do you think when you hear Philomena's story and you think about your story, you know, what comes up for you in the area of awareness?
Well, that's what led to the next step, is when they said, okay, how are we going to have this conversation with children? Because we're not going to sit around the dining room table and say, oh, don't go around water unless you're with an adult. It's going to go right over the top of their head. They're not going to relate to the moment and what's going on. If you catch that teachable moment, that's the best opportunity. But I know we're not always going to be in that situation to do that. So how do you get to the children? Well, I, from experience, from watching enough cartoons with both my boys, I knew what they liked. And so I started thinking, how do we get their attention? Well, creating a cute character that they can look up to and work with that character and creating their own mindset, I believe, was the best way to do it. Because I do have a lot of parents say, oh, it's a wonderful idea that children disobey. And I say, yes, you're correct. They do disobey. But they also have a lot of camaraderie with characters and things that they love. So, you know, they love Barney the Dinosaur and Dora the Explorer and all those different characters. So I said, you know, what better way than maybe create a character that the children can look up to, that they can get excited about and involved with, that'll teach them an important lesson. And it didn't take long to find an otter. Otters, kids love otters. If you've ever been in a zoo where there's otters playing, they're fun, they're, you know, they're excited characters that children love to watch, and they're fantastic swimmers. The other beauty about otters is they're born in a den. They're not born in the water like a fish or other characters that you might utilize, talk about swimming. Otters are born in a den, and their mothers drag them out and teach them how to swim. And they also float on their back, which I think is an important aspect to teach children that at a very young age that don't have skill to be able to do the butterfly stroke or the breaststroke or some of these things, that you can have skills that will protect you if you end up in a bad situation in the water. And one of those is knowing that you hold your breath, you get your nose up in the air, and you float on your back. just those precious moments that you're able to do that can allow someone to help you. So, you know, well, this makes sense. Let's get a character and see if we can get the kids to rally around him. And then we were actually on a flight to go out of town, and I started typing on my iPod and wrote the book, Josh the Baby Otter, in honor of Joshua, and named the character, obviously, after Josh, and all the characters that are in the book are named after his nieces and nephews, and actually my wife's Kathy's middle name is Claire, and that's the mother of Josh, so it just flowed out in literally a matter of a couple hours while we were on an airplane, and said, let's utilize a character and get this character teaching children this important message. And one of the things that I wanted to do when we created the book was, on both sides of the book, in the very beginning, there's a memorial to Joshua that explains why the book is what it is. And in the very back, there's a very important message to adults about teaching children to learn to swim as early as possible and talking to them about this important message. And it's bookend. And I've had some book critics that say, well, we're a little concerned that it's a scary message for children. And I say, well, that's not that part of the book you're not supposed to read to the children. You read the fun, cute side inside of the book to the children, and you read to yourself the important message that we hope that you learn. So the message is really created not just for the children, but for the adults. What we want is we want adults to hear the message as they're reading it to the children and learn what I didn't know, and to reiterate the importance of what I didn't reiterate myself. And so to create a children's book that also educates adults, it was the main goal.
Well, that's beautiful. And, you know, adults really do need the message, as well as older children. You know, I was just thinking when you were sharing about our caller's story and about how this kiddo was, you know, 8 or 9 years old and was dared to get into the water and swim and do, you know, perform a skill that he wasn't at all equipped to do, but did it at the urging of another. And we have heard story upon story of teenagers that do that sort of thing. And Blake, when you brought out even the story about, you know, when we're talking to our children about drugs and alcohol and, you know, all of these different things, people, the dares and the temptations that this world kind of throws at us, can be there. And I think the warnings that bookend the Josh the Otter story are a beautiful reminder to those of us with very thick heads, because we think we do have all the answers and we've got it all figured out. So congratulations to you, Blake, for having that courage to put the message and the strong message in there so those of us adults really pay attention to what's going on here and the awareness that needs to happen.
Yeah, one of our main mantras for the foundation is that we try to create a generational change in the way people think about water. And we're starting from ground one, and we know that we're in this for the long haul, and we hope that that 3, 4, 5-year-old that reads the book, something sparks in their mind, and then when they become 21, 23, 24, whatever age that is, and they're a parent, that they talk to their children about water safety, and they don't even know why. It's just because they learn. Just like people don't really remember the first time they learned to look both ways before they cross the street, they just know to do it. Because it was started so early through their life, they don't really understand when that process started. It's just automatic. And we need to do that with water safety. With the statistics the way they are, it needs to become second nature, the whole conversation and the thought process about it. When that happens, then the numbers will drop and we will have made a huge difference. And the neat part about it is we're not asking to move the world or anything. We're talking about opening up conversations, having, you know, a fun conversations about a cute little otter, and just creating new mindsets and new opening up new avenues of thought processes. And part of, but I didn't want to wait, we didn't want to wait until the four-year-old who read this book grew up and hopefully figured it out. And that's why we wanted to teach the parents. And the interesting part, a quick story that tells me that that we are making a difference, is I had a father come up to me. I was playing in a golf tournament. He came up to me, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, "I get it." And really didn't know what he was talking about. He probably knew that, and he came back, and he said, "I understand what you're doing, and I want you to know I appreciate it." And he said, "I got to tell you a story." He said, "I was standing in the basement talking to a neighbor, and I was having a pretty intense conversation, and I was getting a tug on my shirt tail from my son, and I kept saying, you know, just a minute, son, just a minute, I've got to, you know, we've got to finish this conversation." So that went on for about a minute or two, and then he said, "We got to a point," and I turned around and I said, "Okay, son, what do you want?" And he was standing there in his swimsuit, and he said, "Dad, I've been ready to go into the pool, but you know I can't go there without you." And the father said to me, my wife has been reading your book to my son. And he goes, "I just want you to know, I get it." The amazing part is the son got it, but also the father, just the fact that that happened, said, "I get it." And it woke him up. And it was a child educating his parents on what he had learned. But it was such a major thing, because he said, if he hadn't known that, I could have finished that conversation, turned and walked out the door, and God forbid he would have been in the water. And we don't know that whether that saved that child's life or not. More than likely, it probably didn't. But that's not the point. The point is, two people drastically understood that message from a cute story, and that's what drives me every day and excites me every day, that makes me believe that we're making a difference, and that we're getting people's attention, and we're not having to pull teeth to do it. It's not a sad thing. It's not a tough thing. We're not asking people to give anything up or you know, do anything drastic. I mean, that's the beauty of it. We brought something fun that's cute, and we might make one heck of a difference on the problem. And so that's what drives us every day. And the exciting part is when we hear those stories and we love them.
Absolutely. Well, that's very beautiful. And listeners, I have to tell you, I have had an opportunity to look at the Josh the Baby Otter book. It is adorable. Blake, your story is brilliant. The illustrations are lovely. And if you would, Blake, share with our listeners as well, not only have you created a book of Josh the Baby Otter, but you also have another larger-than-life representation that helps you to get your message across.
Well, when you think about it, you have to try to catch the children's attention in every aspect possible. And so not just having a book, but we also created a sing-along song. And so we have a book read in the back of the book that's on a CD, so it can be plopped into a DVD player or a CD player. Children can follow along, so they're learning the importance of reading. And we get stories of children that won't go to sleep at night unless they listen to Josh the Baby Otter. It has otters chattering and all sorts of background noises. But then the other thing that we knew that we had to follow that up with is I went out immediately and said, we got to create a mascot that the children can meet and they can get hands-on. And so we wanted to reach them in as many different ways as we could. And started out, I found a mascot suit company out of Ohio, and they created the first mascot suit. And we started getting it out, and the demand for the mascot just grew exponentially. We now have 26 of them.
Oh my goodness.
They're all over the country, including Australia has one. And we are really in a position now, we're probably going to have to order another, at least 10 of them. And they're being utilized all over the country through different swim clubs have bought the mascot suit. They go to schools and they read. And one other thing that, when we have time, I'd like to get into it, is the Rotary clubs around the world and around the country have taken this project on, decided that they want to make a huge impact. They've always believed in children's literacy, but now they say, along with children's literacy, we can also save a child's life. And they're getting involved, and they're buying mascot suits, they're taking them to schools, and they're doing the book reads and talking to children, and then they bring out Josh the Otter, and the children laugh, and they giggle, and they immediately go home from school, and they say to Mom and Dad, you won't believe who I met today. And then they get into this drawn-out, long conversation with Mom and Dad, what they learned at school. We learned about water safety, and Josh the Otter came to visit us. And so from a child being in the classroom that day, goes home, and I hear from parents, that's all my child could talk about for a week was Josh the Otter. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just reading the book, but meeting the mascot really entrenched the whole message, and then got the children to go home, talk to their brothers and sisters and their mom and dad and grandma and grandpa of what they learned that day. Because that's how we're trying to reach one person or one child and have it end up then eventually reaching another 6 or 10 or how many ever it takes.
Absolutely. And yeah, the ripple effect of that is endless. And so for our listeners, Blake, if they would like to find out more on how to get a book or bring this type of program to their community, how can they go about doing that?
Our website for Josh the Otter is joshtheotter.org. And if you Google Josh the Otter, we're happy to say it just pops right up. And we also have, we're really excited about our Facebook following. We just went over 3,000 likes, and I would encourage and hope that your listeners would get on there and like us as well, because that only helps us expand and reach out in the message. But all the materials that we have are available on joshtheotter.org. We have them available. What we really need out there, and here's the interesting part, is how hard it is to get into schools. And it's not because we can't financially find the resources to get the materials to schools. It's because schools have so many different things going on. Their curriculum is so full. And to actually get the administrators sometimes and the principals and things to add this program is hard to get in there. So we utilize parent teachers and whatever we can to help try to get this into the school. The program that we have presented in front of a class or an assembly of kindergarten student or first grade lasts about 20 to 30 minutes. So it's not a big, long ordeal, but it has a really long-lasting impact. And the partnership that we created with the Rotary Clubs actually started with a retired Rear Admiral from the Coast Guard. And he was the president of a Rotary Club, and he said, we're giving out dictionaries to fourth graders where I'm from in Florida. And he goes, as much as it's important to teach a child to read and the importance of a dictionary, we're losing too many children in Florida to drowning. He goes, I don't understand this. He goes, as a club president, I want to buy a book for every child in the kindergarten classrooms in our area where our Rotary Club is, and we're going to go read to them and give each one of these child a book to take home. That started 3 years ago. In that first year, they ordered 400 books. Then he challenged the rest of the Rotary Club presidents within that city and area in Florida, which was around Cape Canaveral and Orlando area, and we had another 2,000 go out just within the next couple months. And that was 3 years ago. In the last 6 months, we've sent out over 18,000 copies of Josh the Baby Otter to Rotary Clubs all over the country. And it started just 3 years ago with one little club in Florida. And the Rotarians, they sponsor, they buy the books, they come into the classrooms because they already have that connection. Because they've already been there doing the dictionary program, a lot of times when I talk to Rotarians, oh, I'm a principal, I'm a superintendent, I'm a kindergarten teacher, whatever the case may be, you have that interconnection. So it's been a wonderful partnership, and the Rotarians are wonderful. They're wonderful people that want to make a difference in their own local community. So any of your listeners out there, if you know a Rotarian, you can talk to them and say, this is happening all over the country. We're in over 30 states now and over 250 Rotary clubs around the country that are utilizing the program. And once they hear about it, they'd love to expand on it. So you could make an immediate impact in your community, get a hold of Rotary, and all of a sudden, every kindergarten classroom in your city could have this program within a matter of a few months. So it's a really neat way to expand it and have the program grow. And we love our Rotarians, and we love the partnership that we've created with them. And they have so much fun working with the kids. You know, a lot of times you get a lot of older guys that are Rotarians, and they come in and they get to see the kids laugh and giggle, and they go home with the biggest satisfaction for what they've done that day. And so we're excited about the connection that we've made. And the Rotary Club gets a lot of kudos from the community for what they're trying to do to help protect the children in their community by utilizing the program.
Absolutely. And that, you know, it just really shows you how, you know, throughout these last few years, by you taking and not being afraid to tell your story, to examine your own life, look at, you know, I think you shared, you know, what did we miss here? What happened? And by doing all of those things and taking every step and not being willing or not being afraid to take that first step out of the door to try and make a difference for children and families everywhere in this world by raising that awareness. And that you have brought all of these people, the Rotarians, the different communities alongside of you to help Joshua's legacy continue on and his life continue to impact people, you know, that maybe you would never get to have a conversation with, but their lives are forever changed and possibly saved due to your foundation. You have a tremendous amount of courage, Blake, and kudos to your wife, Kathy, and your families. You shared with us on the website that your faith and your family and your friends really helped bring you through this time, and it sounds from hearing your story that you've had a tremendous amount of support. What can you share with our listeners? Gosh, I cannot believe we are almost an hour. We've got only about 10 minutes left in our time together this evening. But I wanted to know if you could share with us, please, what keeps you going right now and what helped you launch all of this? What gave you the courage and determination to keep going at the onset of this, in a way?
One of the first things that I actually had a fear that I would get past it. And, you know, that may sound funny to some people. It's like, well, yeah, you got to get past it. But I didn't want to wake up any morning and not think of Joshua, because I was expecting actually to have him bury me. I mean, that's what's supposed to happen. Bury the parents. The parents are never supposed to bury the child. And so I thought he would always be with me. And I had a fear that someday I would wake up and it's like, well, you know, I wouldn't think about him. And the other thing that I knew is I had made a commitment to him. Just like my parents made a commitment to me, and they're always there for me. But, you know, blessed that both my parents are still with me, and talk to them all the time, and they're so supportive. And I planned on being there for Joshua. And because he's not physically here doesn't mean that I still didn't make that commitment. And so I feel like I'm fulfilling that commitment in another way. I even at 2.5, Joshua is an exceptional person. I told you a story about him putting himself in timeout and things like that. Uh-huh. I just truly believed he was going to grow up to be something exceptional. But he didn't have the opportunity to grow up and be that exceptional, but he's still going to do something exceptional. And so and he's doing something exceptional through me. And I'm not going to take any of the credit for what's happening in the exceptional side, because if it wasn't for him, it wouldn't be happening. And, you know, I truly give him all the credit in the world for this. I tell people all the time, I'm just not really this nice of a guy. I mean, he changed my life. He changed how I perceive things, how I look at things, how I look at a little child when they're playing around water and stuff like that. He changed who I am and how I perceive things, and he deserves all the credit for that. And so anything that I do daily to make a difference in this, he gets all the credit for it. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing that a 2.5-year-old child can have that kind of impact. We say it right on our website. He was too brief here on earth, but his impact will last forever. And I truly believe that in the way that he's touching so many lives. It kind of bounces off, because it might bounce off of me or bounce off my wife, Kathy, or a ton of the other volunteers that are so actively involved in helping us do what we want to do. But that it started with that little boy, and that's why it happened. So I truly believe that little boy was going to do some great things as he got older. He didn't get an opportunity to get older, but he's still going to do great things. And I'm very proud of him. I'm proud of how he changed my perception in life and made me a better person. And so I tell people sometimes I'm as proud of him as I would if he would have scored the winning touchdowns in a high school football game. Because it's not what he did necessarily, but it's how he touched other people's lives. So that's truly the way I look at it. And it's rewarding to look at it that way in a lot of aspects.
Absolutely. And I just want to echo that. And you're a very courageous, very brave, very integrous man, and your wife as well. And I know that our listeners, your story has touched them. And it certainly has touched my heart, and it's caused me to take a long, hard look and re-examine to see if indeed I am living my life in triumph. And so, Blake, thank you for spending your evening with us, sharing about the foundation, sharing about Josh the Baby Otter, and how all of us can make an impact in our families, in our communities, and in our world for a much safer, fun water experience for all that we love. So thank you for your hard work and your determination to make this a safer place for all of us. And we just love you up in Lincoln, Nebraska. And again, thank you for sharing your time with us and your message and your story. And listeners,
I want to thank you for allowing me to come on and talk, because getting the opportunity to get our message out and talk to people, just this one conversation that we've had could save a beautiful little life if people go out and start talking about what we talked about. And without people like you help bringing this to the forefront, we're not going to be able to do that. So thank you very much for seeing what we're doing and recognizing what a wonderful thing it can do, and helping to bring it forward. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and it is indeed an honor. And thank you for walking your talk. And listeners, thank you for walking your talk with Leanne today, and walking your talk with an angel in heaven and here on earth in Josh the Baby Otter and the Collingsworth family. I do want to update you on some upcoming shows that we are going to be having on the Block Talk Radio. And so bear with me for just one moment while I pull those up. You can find us on the Life Coach Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. There are upcoming episodes. We will be having one tomorrow. And for some reason, I, in all of our chatting, have misplaced my notes on that. But please join us. I know we have three shows coming up here in the next 3 days. And the next time that I am going to be on Blog Talk Radio is going to be on July the 31st at 10 a.m. Mountain Time, and I did find my list. Please join us for the 16th, which is tomorrow, for New You City Coaching with Danielle Mercurio. Wednesday, 7/17, Purposeful Conversations with Jose Albino. And Thursday, July 18th, with David Benjamin Citron, Transforming Your Life in 30 Minutes. And again, listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Blake, for sharing your beautiful story. And we will continue to keep you and your family and your foundation in our prayers. And you are saving one life at a time, one conversation at a time. So, again, we thank you all. Thank you, Blake, and have a beautiful evening, everyone.